I don't know if it's a cultural thing or if it's more of just characteristic of humanity, is in the fact that we are prone to complaining. In fact, sometimes you can even see this when you ask someone about a vacation. You say, well, how was your vacation? And what will the answer be? It'll be something like, well, other than the day it rained, it was great. There's the idea that there's always got to be something that's not quite right. Someone once expressed it as this, that behind every silver lining, there's a cloud. Well, how do we deal with that in our lives? Is that really how God wants us to operate? We certainly understand that God does not want us to have this kind of attitude that just pretends nothing bad exists, that you just ignore all of those things. Sometimes we refer to it as kind of a Pollyanna attitude, that you're not recognizing all of these things that are wrong. Yet, when you look at the scripture, do we not find, though, that God is saying that you need to make the most of your circumstances, that in everything you do, you need to glorify me? The lesson that really brings that home is found in the example of the Apostle Paul as we look in Philippians chapter 1, which is where we're going to spend the majority of our time this morning. That as we look at this situation, what the Apostle Paul is going to say is that even when times look really, really dark, when things look bleak and everything around you doesn't seem to be going well, good can happen in that. And these hard times that you are in, though he's not preaching a sermon about it, he's just simply recording the details of his life, what they're doing is showing that good things can happen. And so this morning, our sermon is going to be twofold. I want us to first understand that we see these things and we understand that just in life in general, we need to be looking for these hard times to produce good results. But at the same time, I want us to look at it from the standpoint of our opportunities to spread the gospel. That when we think about our theme this year of going into all of the world and preaching the gospel, that really this concept of hard times is one of those occasions when we may do our most good. So with those things in mind, let's look at what's going on with the Apostle Paul. And from the words that he records for us here, understand how that he sets the example that we should follow. So when we think about the idea of bad circumstances, what does that mean? Well, think about the word circumstance itself. It's one of those words that if you look at the two words put together to form this one, it gives the definition. You think about the first part of that in terms of circumference or circumnavigation, and it's the idea of going around. And then to take a stance is to stand, and so you shove those two together, and what have you got? It's what's standing around you. So what circumstances are you in? Well, it's those things that are around you. And when we think about circumstances, sometimes they're of our own making, aren't they? If we have lived a life that is pitiful spiritually, there are going to be circumstances that we've created as a result of that. Sometimes those circumstances are going to be totally from happenstance, that we were in the wrong place at the wrong time, yet because of that, here are the things standing around that we have to deal with. We might even could say that sometimes because we have taken a stand for right, the circumstances around us seem rather bad, and that would be where the Apostle Paul is. When we think about the apostle here, we're finding that he is in a situation that looks really bleak. He's in prison. And depending on when the book of Philippians was written, there's debates on that. But there's a possibility that Paul may have even been in prison for a couple of years by this point. Yet, what are we seeing in his attitude here? Paul's circumstances related completely because he had chosen to do the right thing. Because of the preaching and teaching of the gospel, because of him reflecting the Father, what we find is that he had been persecuted because of that. And it harkens back to what the Lord said when he said, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. That's where the Apostle Paul is now. Now, as you consider that, I've got a question I want you to ask yourself. How would you have responded to that? I don't know if you and I'll ever find a time within our society when we're arrested for similar things. The way things are going, that's a great possibility. That there will come a day when you speak the truth, you get arrested for it. How are we going to respond to that? Well, I believe for most of us, there would be a very grave temptation to look upon this in an extremely negative light, to almost cast blame on God for yet doing His will, but allowing us to have this happen to us. That would be a tendency for a people who are rather prone to complaining. But I want you to notice what the Apostle Paul says in this. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. So here is a man who what we would consider to be in very bleak circumstances, yet what he says is that when I look at the situation I'm in, it's really turned out pretty well. Well, our question is, how could that possibly be? Well, he elaborates on that. He goes on to say, I want you to know that this has turned out really well because it has served to advance the gospel. And he goes on to say, it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard. Paul is under the guardship of a very elite group. Here are soldiers who are making sure that the apostle is not going to escape, that nobody's going to get in and get him. And the apostle probably most of the time is chained to one of these guys. You want to take a guess of what these soldiers heard from the apostle Paul? You talk about a captive audience. Paul had one, right? They're tied to him. They're chained to him. And the apostle is saying, let me tell you about Jesus Christ. Let me tell you about salvation. I don't know if any of these men were converted, but I can guarantee you this, that these men who were chained to the apostle Paul, they heard the gospel of Christ preached. Now, let me ask you this. Under normal circumstances, how many of those men would have come into contact with the apostle Paul? Under normal circumstances, how many of those guys who were part of this imperial force would have ever heard a sermon by the apostle? I think even in modern times, being a prison guard can make you kind of a grizzled individual. I'm not trying to insult any of your relatives you might have who have that, but yet just that daily contact with people of that caliber. And yet here are men, the apostle says, I have preached Jesus Christ to them. But he doesn't stop there. He goes on and he says, not only has it become known throughout the whole imperial guard, he says, and all to the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. In other words, by what the apostle was preaching, what others were saying about him, what they understood was that his bonds were for Jesus Christ, that this is why he was in prison. And the apostle says, I'm using these circumstances to the glory of Jesus Christ. Now, with that in mind, let me ask you this. How do you view your circumstances? Where you are in life right now may be because of your own choosing. Or you look at it and you may assign it because of parents or because of a spouse, because of a job, because of health, because of the lack of health. When I look at my circumstances and I say, I am dissatisfied with this. I don't like where I am. I don't like what's going on. There's a very great danger that I'll become discontent with that. And that where I think I want to be, I am not there. And because of that discontentment, it may cause me to turn inward. Say, I'm just not going to have any contact with anybody else. It may cause me to grow angry that I'm lashing out at these people who I believe are responsible for the circumstances I'm in. Or it may lead to a feeling of simply being upset by this is what my life is all about. What do we do when we are faced with that kind of temptation? It's at this point we look at what God has said. Going to the writer James, James says in chapter 1, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. God's providence is something that none of us understand in present time. Sometimes we can see it in the rearview mirror, but even then sometimes it's difficult. Does God somehow cause us to be in every circumstance we're in? Probably not. Sometimes because of free will of our own and others, we end up in situations that are less than what we consider ideal. And so as James deals with that, he says, count it joy. When you meet these trials, and I want you to notice his term here, of various kinds. That keeps us from trying to pinpoint a trial that he's specifically talking about. So James doesn't say, count it all joy when you're persecuted for righteousness' sake. He doesn't say, count it all joy when you're arrested for preaching the gospel. He says, count it all joy when you meet trials, bad circumstances of various kinds, because here is the test of your faith. Here is where you are going to learn how to grow, to have this steadfastness that is going to make you perfect in the eyes of God. So, when I find myself in those situations, I don't turn inward. I don't grow angry. I don't get despondent. I don't get upset. I count my blessings. That's what the Apostle Paul was doing. But let's take this a step further. When I think about these circumstances, how do I use them as an opportunity to advance the gospel? Because that's what made the Apostle Paul happy. He said, you know, I just count it a really good thing that in my present situation, I'm able to teach and preach Jesus Christ. What about us? Isn't it rather ironic that sometimes the worst circumstances produce the best opportunities to share the gospel? We know this even from our own lives. What are you more moved by? If you hear of someone, and this person is described as why he has everything going for him, everything is going his way, and he serves God faithfully. Well, that's good. But what if you hear about the man or woman who has faced trial after trial after trial, who has stayed faithful to God? Which is the more encouraging of the two? We know the answer to that. I think that's why the account of Job resonates so well with us. There's a lot in the book of Job. A lot of theology in the book of Job. But one thing that stands out is here is a man who was knocked down time and time again, and though he struggled with his faith through all of that, he never gave up on God. How do I do in those situations? When my circumstances are not what I want, how am I going to be like the Apostle Paul and use this to the glory of God? Well, let's talk to Peter about that. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 11, he's not dealing with the same idea, but the conclusion is the same. When he says, whoever speaks is one who speaks the oracles of God, whoever serves is one who serves by the strength that God supplies, what? In order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. That's our goal. When times are good, when times are bad. When circumstances are good, when circumstances are bad. When things are going well, when things are not going well. Everything I do is for the glory of Jesus Christ. And I can guarantee you that if that is the attitude that I have, good is going to be accomplished. So what do we learn from Paul? First thing we learn is always look for the opportunity to share the gospel. Always look for the people who need to hear the message of Christ. You see, if I'm turned inward, I don't see the need of others. If it's all about me, if it's all about bringing attention to myself, I'll never see that. But if I'm looking for the needs of others, then I'm going to find the opportunities to share the gospel. Let me couple that with this idea as well. Never judge the recipients. I doubt that those soldiers to whom Paul was chained would have been in anyone's book, to put it in modern terminology, as good prospects. Do you? These are probably men who had lived a hard life, perhaps had served in the military before this. Paul said, they're going to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And thus, when I am in these situations, and there are those who can benefit from this message that I have to bring, never, ever, ever assume that they are uninterested in the gospel of Jesus Christ. You see, when I look at this, I understand I can't always control my circumstances, but I can always control how I use my circumstances. If things are not going well, I can choose to use that in a very positive means, both to encourage and to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let's continue with what Paul says. Because another major idea that we find here is the strength that he's giving others. You see, he's influencing people in prison. But interestingly enough, he's also influencing a lot of folks outside of the prison. Listen to what he says next. He says, and most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. You talk about someone who is in no way looking inwardly. Here's the apostle who says, people got to hear the gospel preached. And now he says, those who are on the outside, these brethren of mine, because of my imprisonment, they're not only more confident, but they're using that confidence to speak the word with boldness. So what's going on here? Well, what was going on with Paul was no secret. And so what we find is that through his circumstances, he had inspired others. Through what was going on with him, others were hearing how bold he was and that he would not stop even though the chains were on him. He was still preaching. He was still teaching. And they basically said, if the apostle Paul can do this while he's chained to a prison guard, then why in my freedom should I not be preaching the gospel? And if I am arrested, so be it. Here is one who went before us who was arrested, yet he's using this for the glory of God. I can do that as well. What do we learn from that? What we learn is that we never underestimate the power of a good example. You see, the apostle was doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing. The apostle was doing exactly what the work that God called on him to do. Yet because of the example that he was using, he was allowing others to do what Jesus Christ told us that we need to do, and that's to encourage others. Consider what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5. When in verse 16 he said, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. We never do anything for self-glorification. We never do anything so that somebody will pat us on the back and tell us how valuable we are in the service of God. We never do anything so that we are drawing the attention inwardly. What we're doing is seeking to reflect the glory of God. So let's narrow this down once again. How am I using this in the spreading of the gospel? So here is Paul using his circumstances, and by the good example that he's setting, others are also teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. What's the best way to spread the gospel? This year we've taken this as a real focus for the year. And there are posters up. There are sermons that have been delivered. There have been guest speakers who have been called in, as we had last week, to talk about how that they do this very thing. And all of those things are very, very good. The visual reminders, the hearing of the message of what we need to be doing. But as good as all of those things are, they're peripheral in answering this question. What is the best way to spread the gospel? The very best way is to do it. To stop talking, to stop thinking about it, to stop planning about it, but to do it. So I look for my opportunities. I'm at the hospital visiting a sick relative. Here's a nurse who I invite to church. Here I am at my children's school. Whatever the case might be, I'll leave that up to you and your child. But here is a teacher. Do you know the gospel of Jesus Christ? Here's a neighbor. Would you like to read the Bible together? That's how you spread the gospel. But let's tie this in with our point. Because the way that we use this good example is to inspire others to do the same. You see, I can talk about it all day long. But when I take someone with me who sees me doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that's when your good example stands out. And so it may very well be that when others see that it can be done, the same impact that the apostle had on his brethren is going to be the impact I can have on brethren. Why do most people not want to spread the gospel? It's because of fear. What's somebody going to say? What's somebody going to ask? What's somebody going to do perhaps to me because they don't like that? Or they're going to be relationships that are ended. It's all of these things of borrowing bad things from the future. If you see someone who gets a door slammed in their face and the person walks to the next house and knocks again, that's how you serve as a good example. When you invite a young person to go with you to a Bible study, that's a good example. And what I may be doing in what appears to be a very small thing may very much be imbuing someone to do what God wants us to do in taking His gospel message to others. Therefore, if my circumstances are such that I can show someone else what it means to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, I do it. Let's look at one other idea that the apostle spoke of here. And that was his glorying in the fact that Jesus Christ had been proclaimed. Because what's interesting is that while on the outside he was encouraging some brethren to be bolder and to do the right thing, he was also setting an example for those with very poor motives. Listen to what follows. In verse 15, he says, "Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, others from goodwill." That's who we just talked about. "The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to inflict me in, or to afflict me in my imprisonment." The apostle writes and he says, this has all really turned out well for the advancement of the gospel. There are those who are boldly proclaiming the gospel of Jesus. And he says, there are some who are also proclaiming the message of Jesus Christ, but from very poor motive. What was going on here? I suspect that there were some who were really jealous of the apostle Paul. Here was a man who was tireless in his work, who made the best of his circumstances, and because he was doing the right thing, they didn't like how that kind of showed them up. So here he is in prison now, and it gives them the opportunity to grab the spotlight, to outdo the Apostle Paul, and thus, in the process, to improve their own reputation. So that others would compliment their work. So that others would think, what a good person this is in Jesus Christ. All out of very, very poor motive. I want to point out a couple of things about that. First is, isn't it interesting how the gospel can succeed in a bad environment? I think that tells us the power of the gospel, that even in a situation where there's somebody who's doing it out of envy and poor motive, still the gospel message is bringing people to Jesus Christ. The second thing I want us to see is Paul is letting us know that Christians are not immune to these kinds of rivalrous attitudes. In fact, if you go over just another chapter in Philippians, in chapter 2. He says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. That speaks a powerful message to us, that because we are in Christ, it does not mean that we are not going to face these temptations to be rivalrous, to be jealous and envious of others. I don't know how many men who could have been extremely faithful gospel preachers have been brought down because of this rivalry, because they see another man who does better, who can speak to an audience better, or maybe, as we're talking about this morning, is a better personal evangelist and allows the envy and the jealousy to consume, looking for opportunities not to help, but to destroy the one who perhaps can do a better job. Elders can have the same kind of problem. They look at another man who is maybe more effective in communicating those things that a congregation needs to hear, either collectively or individually, allows that to bring them down. Bible class teachers, song leaders. We face that temptation. But what I must do is train myself to say, if a man can preach a better sermon than me, that is to the glory of God. If a man can bring 100 people to Jesus Christ for every one that I bring to Jesus Christ, that is a blessing, and I'm glad he's my brother. I'm glad we're on the same team. Let me just say this. Congregations are not immune to this. That there can be rivalries, and you hear about another congregation that's of God's people that are doing really, really well, and there can be those feelings of jealousy and envy. Let me tell you, if there is a church that is doing well and the gospel is being preached and brethren are being edified and kids are being taught well, that is to the glory of God. We don't fall to that kind of thing if we are in Jesus Christ. Let's look and see what the apostle did. Paul did not like their spirit. What we just looked at said that. Don't have these rivalrous attitudes. But while he did not like that, listen to what he says. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. That's the attitude. What do we find? While the method was not good, Paul gloried that the gospel was doing its work. I don't know that any of us will be in the situation the Apostle Paul was. But if we are, if there are others who in some kind of convoluted way are doing good work at our expense, what do we do? We glory in that, and we do not retaliate, but we rejoice. If there is someone who is seeking to bring me down, to lift themselves up, to hear the gospel of Christ, while I may pray for their attitude like Paul, I rejoice in the outcome. That's what he teaches us. While our circumstances may not be what we think we would like for them to be, Paul says, use them to advance the gospel. And the apostle says, always let your example encourage others to do the same. And even if there are those who are doing it from poor motive, rejoice that Christ is preached. So this morning I ask you, where are you in all of this? Bitter? Sad? Discouraged? Those are all things Christians face. Every one of us faces that temptation. And I imagine all of us, if we were honest, say that we have fallen to those from time to time. I certainly have. But the apostle's example says, stop looking inward and start looking outward. Think about what you can do for the glory of Jesus Christ and do it, and don't only do it, but bring others to do it as well. And if we can do that, we'll find the silver lining in the dark cloud. And what we will find is that that dark cloud may very well have been the best thing ever to bring us to do what we know we need to do. Let's never forget the good example that the apostle sets, but much more than that, as the apostle, let's remember that everything is to be done for the glory of Jesus Christ. Maybe this morning, bleak situations have brought you to view life as you ought to, that you understand that there is something major, major missing, and that's Jesus Christ. Why not come to Him this morning? His invitation stands ready as it always does. Not that He can become a part of your life, but that He can become your life and that everything that from now on is viewed through Him. Maybe you've allowed those circumstances to bring you down. Might be discouragement. Might even be worse. Might even be that it's brought you to damage your relationship with God. This morning, if we can pray with you about that, we'll do so. But wherever we are, let's take the apostles' encouraging example. And from this point on, look forward to the time in this life when we can proclaim Jesus so that one day we can give Him the glory around the throne in heaven.